business portion of our meeting, the A, organizational part, agenda and consent items. Is there anybody, anything, or anybody would like to take anything off of consent? Hearing no one, I don't think there's a whole lot to put on.
I was going to recommend the holiday schedule, but I do want to talk about the calendar. So C3...
Well, there's a choice.
Not on the holiday schedule. The holiday schedules are active.
But you said you wanted to speak to the holiday schedule.
No, the academic...
Oh, okay.
Nobody has an objection, C3 and C5.
I'm fine with that.
Is there anything else anyone would like to take off of consent? Add to consent?
Well, we added C3 and C5.
I'm sorry. Yes, and I have that down. Is there a motion to move a consent calendar as amended?
I'll move it. I'll second it.
The agenda and consent items have been moved by Eileen Miranda Jimenez and seconded by Daniel Monterez to approve as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. That brings us to B4. Information report, Every Student Succeeds Act.
Thank you, President Polis. This has been on our board for about a year, and we keep moving it down, moving it down, moving it down. This is the federal student evaluation system that's put into place, Every Student Succeeds Act, which everyone calls the ESSA. And the reason we keep putting it off, because the rules kept changing. And we really didn't want the public to hear this presentation until we felt that we were in a pretty solid position that we could back up what we presented to the public. So we have asked Dr. Flores to present a brief overview of the ESSA and how it ties in with LCFF, which I know you're familiar with. So, Dr. Flores.
To join you this evening to talk about the Every Student Succeeds Act and the local control funding formula. Like Dr. Hinman said, this is a moving target. I'd like to thank President Polis for the opportunity, our esteemed board, Dr. Hinman, and our community for giving me this opportunity to share this information. We're going to have a very brief overview, and the information you're going to see in this presentation are going to be sample indicators that will be likely available internally as of November, so that we can use with our internal groups to evaluate our own practices and plan forward, and will likely be available to the public in January as a public use document that will be available for everyone. So we're very excited about the opportunity to share with you in advance the new structure and how this control has moved from the federal government back to the states to create a single accountability system that's going to take into consideration the state and local priorities as we develop our plans as well. So the first chart indicates some of the major shifts that have gone on as a result of the ESSA replacing No Child Left Behind. This year we're still in transition, and 17-18 will be the year of full implementation. Critical in this change is that the requirements for teacher certifications are moved back to our state certifications, as opposed to the highly qualified teacher element that was previously taken over by the federal government during the No Child Left Behind era. The indicator of 100% proficiency, AYP and API, have sunset, and that's no longer our targets. And the accountability for English learners, which used to be in a source of Title III when we used to talk about AMAOs and whether we met them or not, is now moved into Title I so that when we're evaluating the progress of our ELs, we're doing that along with the rest of our students that are designated in those special populations. We're now going to be using multiple measures, including state and local indicators, as opposed to our single assessments that we're using in the past. Science tests will be pending until field tests are completed this year, but we will be continuing with ELA and math as we have for the past 2 years. We have new subgroups added. We have our homeless group and our foster youth groups that are now going to be designated populations that we're going to be evaluating for progress, as well as parents that students that have parents who are active duty military. And instead of our traditional that we've had through No Child Left Behind, where we've had our schools go into program improvement, they are now going to target the bottom 5% of Title I schools and high schools that have graduation rates of less than 67%. The accountability for subgroups is also going to occur for the schools that have like performance to the bottom 5%. So if schools have a subgroup that's performing equally poor as a school that's performing the lowest 5% for two subsequent years, they would be up for corrective action defined by the state, and currently not yet defined what that might look like. I'd like to point out that this is an example of John Doe Elementary School, and this is what a indicator would look like at the school site level. Now, the indicators you see there are very similar to the consumer report indicators, and please don't fixate on the shape or the look of the indicator. What we want to really look at is the color. Blue is the top score that you can get. Green is the targeted area that we want to achieve. Yellow and orange indicators indicate something to look at, and red is something very critical that we need to evaluate. So this will be available at the school level. While the indicator may change shape, the color will be consistent. The little arrow provides you deeper information on that area so that you can click into ELA assessment and see the dispersion of subgroup performance in that area. Critical in this is you'll also see status, which is the actual performance, and change, which is the change of performance from year to year or multiple years to 1 year. And this is the brand new color chart system, and it's really a lot of boxes, again, blue being the best, green being next, yellow following, orange and red. And on the left is your status. Where are you performing? From very high to very low. You can see in this chart that I circled high, and let's pretend that this is our graduation rate. If the school has a high graduation rate and has increased, we would follow those two indicators across to get the intersection for our performance level. There is currently not a name associated with them. We would just have to say that it's a green indicator, which is a targeted area. And that's how we would be differentiating this in the process as we move forward. So we're looking at their status, which is their performance, and their change over time in order to gauge our progress towards meeting the needs of all of our students. This is a top-level display that is a fictitious district, and this provides the top-level information on the indicators. It, again, uses the same color pattern, but it's a different shape. Now we have little pie shapes. They still can't come up with a defined shape yet. Following that, we have how many student groups the school has. And then following that, how many student groups are falling into the red and orange range. And those are the areas that are going to need intense intervention during our LCAP process. This is the equity report. So when you dig deeper into a content area, you get to these charts that provide you information on how subgroups are performing in that area. Again, same color scheme. And then not yet completed, but will be available, are the statements of model practice, which are model practices that the CDE will recommend in order to help move those populations forward. They have not defined what those will be at each level yet, but those will be in place maybe in November when it's supposed to be available. And then links to external resources that will also be available in order to help our teams plan. digging deeper into the equity report, when you click on a subgroup, you'll then get the deeper data involved in that group, including their rating, their status, and change. Now, the critical element I think that we need to take away from this is that we are going to have multiple indicators. Gone are the days where we'll be able to define a school by one score. There will not be one amalgamation of all these colors together to get a rainbow for you. It's going to be separate scores and indicators so that we know that we have moving targets, and this will help highlight the needs of groups and help increase our ability to close those gaps. Thank you for this opportunity to give a brief introduction. I look forward to the opportunity when this will become even more available, and I appreciate this opportunity.
The multiple measures, can you give me an example of the different testing that we would be doing?
Well, currently, the multiple measures are indicators of the state priorities. So currently, for the area of college and career readiness, the anticipation is that they will be able to, in the future, include students that complete A through G requirements, students that complete AP exams, IB exams, career technical pathways, as well as the 11th grade assessment, which has now been pulled into the college and career readiness. We're not in full implementation until 2017 and 18, so we're limited on our indicators now. But the idea is that we have multiple measures in that we're now focusing on different areas, including community involvement, absenteeism, graduation rates, English language arts, math assessments, and next year we'll likely have chronic absenteeism also as an indicator. So when we're talking about multiple measures for English language arts and math, it will boil down to those CASP assessments, but we have multiple indicators across a school in order to gauge progress.
And it would all show up on the same document.
It would all show up on the same document. So college and career readiness would then be amalgamation of all those indicators. How can we prove that this child is ready and college and career ready? And that may have multiple opportunities, and they would show up either as met or not met and be part of that category.
Last board meeting, they were saying that the special education students' test results weren't included in the districts. So, but they would be included in this.
Yes, they will be. They will continue to be one of our subgroups. So let me go back to the equity report. So students with disabilities would is the third to last indicator bubble. So we'd continue to get reporting data with students with disabilities.
And that's how we would track that.
And that's how we track that. And then we could dig deeper into the equity report. And the one that's titled English Learners, we could pull that up for students with disabilities. And we'd have all of that rich data to be able to support that position.
Wow, a lot of work, but it's going to be fantastic.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
So I appreciate all the effort you've put into this so far. Is there any other questions?
Thank you for providing us a color copy, because to see it to match your screen was very important. The one that was provided here today didn't have that color, so thank you for including that. And I can't wait to see how amazing our district's going to look.
Absolutely. I'm quite excited as well.
Thank you, Dr. Flores.
Thank you again for the opportunity, and thank you, Dr. Hinman, for the opportunity.
Dr. Flores, before you go,
yes.
Comparing apples to apples, how will we have an API number?
How will we have an API? There will be no single.
There
will
be no API
there will
number.
Be no API indicator. Now the state and federal requirements are all consolidated into these multiple measures and multiple charts, and we will no longer see a single indicator like an API.
But the CST scores, the Common Core scores, however, will be a standalone that we could measure ourselves against.
Absolutely. The CASP assessments will be separately indicated in ELA and math, and in the future we'll have those same science scores that you're used to seeing after those become available.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. C2, the student academic calendar.
Thank you, President Polis. If you look at C2 and C4, I will be honest with you. We almost
just put A in. That was basically, that is our recommendation. That was the committee's recommendation, but cooler heads prevailed, and really this is a board decision. So we've given you the top two calendars for discussion if you choose. Mike Seaman is going to walk you through the process quickly, and then it will be up to you to decide upon which calendars you'd like to go forward with. Did I take all your words from you? That
not at all. I just didn't know if I was coming.
That's right.
As we've done in the past, we have a number of calendars. We meet with the calendar committee, which includes administrators and people from both unions, and then the schools solicit paired input. And so with these calendars that you have before you, the two unions, CSEA and TALK, gave us their recommendations. And then the parents gave their recommendations throughout the district. Reason we're recommending calendar A on 17-18 is it was the overwhelming one that was recommended by both unions and the parents. And calendar A and B for 2018-19, which would be C4, very similar calendars. So I think the only difference is one day in the winter break. So that was a split vote between, the unions had theirs, told us theirs, but the parents were split between both of those. It was kind of six and one half dozen of the other on 18-19. So that was the process that we used to get to recommending you calendar A for 17-18 and calendar A for 18-19.
Board discussion?
For 17-18, I prefer A because once again, with starting the school year where we're starting it, we have made our semesters lopsided. A is less lopsided than B.
So is that a motion for A?
Yeah, I'll move it. For 17-18.
It's been moved by Jessica. Okay. No, I was still going to have further discussion because it hasn't been seconded.
Okay. Mr. Seaman, what I wanted to know, and I was one of those parents who got the email asking for which calendar A or B, but for our last two school years, it might be three, but for sure the last two, we have ended on a Wednesday, therefore giving that two-day break for staff to get the school ready for summer school. And that has been a great breather because it's the students have reported that's a great breather. I've heard from teachers. Granted, I've not talked to any unions, so I don't know where they stand on that. And we're ending on the Friday there, and then we're asking students to come in on Thursday, and I don't know the trends for our district, but I know as a whole, when you try to start midweek or later, parents blow it off because it's only a day or two, and so then they don't end up start showing up in larger numbers until the following week. So that was my concern. I liked how it had been a tradition since I've been here where we've started on a Thursday. I understand that we've got the 2 days of training and then the 1 day for the teachers to prep. So starting on August 9th to me makes great sense. And then if teachers need that little extra on the weekend to get their classrooms ready, they can take it. And if they don't, that's fine. And then we begin school on Monday. So I was curious what the thinking was that we changed from what we were doing before. And it didn't come to the board first for us to give our input or parameters before it went out to the groups. So I know that when you do committees, they don't like seeing that whatever it is they put forth gets changed. But that starting on a Monday is a good fresh start. Ending on that Wednesday gives us that breather before we start summer school on Monday. For the teachers to get their lessons plans ready, for the staff to clean the school, you know, and so ending on that Friday and then saying everybody back on Monday for summer school. So I was curious about the thinking there. Because my recommendation would be to mirror what we were doing before.
The ending date is always varied. We've ended on Fridays, we've ended on Wednesdays, we've ended on Thursdays. The start date up until this year was always on a Monday. The teachers would come back Thursday, Friday. The kids would start on Monday. We've added a PD day there. So there's 3 days before school starts rather than two that we've always had before. And the committee and some discussion felt, and other districts do start midweek and have a short week to start and come back, get kids acclimated. Those first couple days you're getting people in your class, there's a lot of changes that go on even at the secondary and the elementary level. So you get them in there for a couple days, and then you really hit the ground running on that. Monday was the thinking of doing it this way. Everyone comes back on Monday, you get your 2 days of PD in, you set up your classroom, kids come in for a couple days, and then you start going. That was the discussion, that's how it went. The end really wasn't discussed, but we have, the ending dates have always been different depending on the number of days, depending on when we start and the different holidays that are in there and things like that. So that was how the discussion went.
Yeah, because I noticed that in our prior calendars where we were starting Monday or and last this year was Tuesday, to what Ms. Shoemaker was saying, we had an 85-98, and over here what's being proposed is an 83-100. So that balance was even further off. So I just wanted to see how the board felt, because as Dr. Hinman says, at the end of the day, it's our choice. So my recommendation was to go 9, 10, 11, let the kids start on, I guess, Tuesday, because then that would push back our end date. Or that would push our end date to June 6th, but which would then that would be an 86-97 on days in each semester. But I didn't know where my colleague stood.
Did any of the stakeholders you discussed show that they had a preference towards starting on a Thursday versus a Wednesday, or
I'm not sure if they had, that was their or Monday. Did they express that and then it kind of got shot down, or was that just never?
When we met as a committee, this was just what the committee had recommended. They thought this was the better way to go. Come in on a Monday, get those professional developments done, get my classroom set up, and then we get kids, yam for a couple days. I experienced that in Glendora when I was there. We started on Wednesdays, but it's, you know, you can start on Mondays, you can start on, I don't see many districts start on a Friday, but.
And I would say that there is something to that short week to start, kind of like, okay, it's easy to get through it, I got my feet wet, like Mike said, not that we lose any time of instruction, but, you know, that Monday I'm ready to go. But I do also see definitely your point about if school ended on Friday, would summer school start on the following Monday? That could be done, but I know it is a challenge for the sites. But if they know a full year in advance, it's.
But if I just could weigh in ever so briefly, if that is a concern, and I get that concern, we can adjust summer school if that's the need to start it on Tuesday or Wednesday, carry it into that next week at the end. So I would argue there's more flexibility in the summer school schedule than there would necessarily be in this one.
I know as a special education parent, and there's such a variety of different issues, but it makes it very hard to not have a continued education. So any gap makes it very difficult, and I know for elementary schools, really the only ones we're doing it for children that get the extended school year. And so if you start missing days, then it's almost like starting over again, and you're going to miss some time at the beginning just getting them reacclimated to school, even if it's just a short break. Anything more than a weekend makes it difficult. At least that's what the parents that I have any dealing with, and from my personal experience, how that makes it difficult, because so that's losing education for them if there's that gap. And I know we've had that, and then parents were saying that it was really hard to get their kids back to school because they thought it was summer.
So then with that in mind, I'm curious about the start then. So coming
the
not
start
not
that's
not being a full week, but coming in on a Thursday, Friday, and then you're back in on Monday. How does that work with the
that would be fine because they've already been on a break. So they haven't had extended school year, and it may be a month to 6 weeks, you know, probably more like a month they've been out of school. So that made it an easier transition. And then they know they're going to, and you have that whole kind of conversation. You know, you're only going to go for 2 days, and it won't be long, and then you're going to have to. But I can understand for the secondary folks, that might be an issue. Trying to get this, because you have a whole new classroom, and you never know where your classroom is going to be. So that might be an issue for them. And Dr. Henman said that he could look into that if that's. And the other complaint that I had when we started school so early in August is that there wasn't enough of a break for either families or staff. Mm-hmm. So they liked it when we push it further back, and some of them would even like it to go back to September. But I mean,
Labor Day, right?
The closer we get to the August 1st, the more unhappy folks are. And it said it interferes with their vacations, their personal, their time with their family. A lot of them travel during that time. So we infringe on their family time also, is what I've heard from the community. But there is, Jessica Shoemaker has moved A for the 17-18 school year. I will second that. Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That passes unanimously. So that brings us to C4. Is there any, it's going to be a lot of the same discussion, but is there anything you would like to bring to our attention at this time? Okay, is there a motion? And I understand on this particular calendar also it was A as well, is what
yes,
the
correct.
Staff was.
That was correct.
The majority of individuals yep. and parents wanted, but there really wasn't total consensus on it. Is there a motion for either calendar at this time?
I'm okay.
Okay. Okay, Jessica Shoemaker has moved calendar A for the 2018-19 school year. Is there a second on that?
Okay.
Michael Flowers has seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? So the vote is 4-1 with Eileen Miranda Jimenez. The no vote on that one. Michael Flowers. Am I missing something, or are we done? That brings us to the end of the meeting. Is there any further board discussion at this time? Just a minute.
Okay. Dr. Henman, with our Hearst Ranch Harvest Festival, as Ms. Sosa had said, the students at Coronado with Hearst Ranch, it's been a long-standing tradition mm-hmm. to have them be volunteers, and nobody showed up this year.
Huh.
When Mr. Glickman was there, we would get about 25 students, and then last year it dropped to 10, and this year it was zero.
Hmm.
So I don't know. I know we have a new principal, and I know that Mr. Glickman was a very, very special student, and I understand that our numbers are down at Coronado as well. There's 100 students. So they've been such a staple every year, and it's been wonderful to have the Coronado students. So everyone kept asking me at the registration table, where are the Coronado students? And I kept saying, I don't know. So promoting it better next year maybe mm-hmm. within the school. But I would hate for us to lose that collaboration
right.
because the Coronado students are amazing. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention from this
yep.
past Saturday. I didn't hear a suggestion. My colleagues, I was going to mention to Dr. Hinman, I don't know how everybody feels about it, but I love reading our West Covina Bee.
Mm-hmm.
I love hearing the things that we're doing. I was going to recommend that we do a little corner spotlight, if at all possible, to one, a current student that's in college, such like an Andrew Leshman who's over at Stanford,
mm-hmm.
or our ASB president last year who's a Gates Millennium winner who's over at Berkeley. You know, quick little paragraph, what they're up to, how college life is going for them, so that parents can see that we've got some amazing students at top-notch colleges, and it helps them to see. You know, we've had students in the past at Yale and all over the place. And then potentially any alumni that are maybe 10 years out, like our football player and the great work that he's doing. I understand that we may not always hear what the alumni are doing, so it doesn't mean that it's set in stone. But I figured at least with the students, we've got a nice lengthy list of current students that are in college
right. That
would be a great promoter for parents to see. So I was going to recommend that. The other thing is the mayor, James Toma, attended Roland Unified School District State of the District breakfast, and he wanted me to pass along, and I told him I would, the suggestion of a State of the District breakfast for West Covina. He asked if we had one. I said no.
Did you mention to him that we used to be part of State of the City, that the district?
No, I did not. He specifically asked if we did it, and it was only on the school district. He said it was very well attended, very informative, great to hear the things that Roland was doing. So I told him I would pass that suggestion along on behalf of the mayor. And then the students didn't mention it, but over at West Covina High School on their Instagram, we've got five or six students that just got a Quest Bridge scholarship from West Covina High School. I don't know if Quest Bridge has given any to Edgewood, because I was looking at the Instagram from West Covina High School, but these students get full four-year rides. And they're low income. Their parents are earning $60,000 or less. And they are matched with the elite colleges. And if they are selected, then they get a full ride for 4 years. So we've got five or six students at West Covina High. So that is another good thing to put in the West Covina Beat, and just like our National Merit Scholars. So this is pretty darn amazing. And I didn't hear Ms. Beltran mention it in her report. She probably doesn't know, but it was on their Instagram. So I thought maybe we could find out if Edgewood has any Quest Bridge mm-hmm. scholars as well, so that we can put them in our West Covina Beat of all the amazing things we're doing. That was it.
Ms. Olsa, Ms. Miranda Jimenez had said that it seems like there was a difficulty getting the individual from Coronado to Hurst Ranch. Yeah. Is there something that the district could help facilitate?
No, I don't think so. I'm not sure why no one showed up.
I did talk to Mr. Thomas, and when we had that visit, and he said he was going to see what he can do. So he thought he was going to be able to do it. But evidently, when I see him, I'm definitely going to mention it to him now that Eileen said it.
Yeah,
and
the person that came out was an ROP teacher, wasn't even one of our staff. It was Mr. Hernandez with the East San Gabriel Valley ROP. So he did get students there from Charter Oak. The Charter Oak side had their volunteers, but our West Covina Coronado side did not.
Well, I'm going to speak to Mr. Thomas personally when I see him, because he did tell me personally he was going to send someone. I just mentioned it to him. I'm just going to ask him what happened.
Well, I know that they had to divide up the duties, and I know that they're still very active with the parents' place and the TOPS. They had mm-hmm. a lot of students. So we have to find out like what the preference is for the students and then maybe if there was difficulty getting there.
Right,
but
maybe miscommunication.
Yes.
Well, and we're treading very close to personnel issues, so I'm getting uncomfortable with
yes.
this discussion.
Okay. We will adjourn the meeting at 8:35.